everybody, welcome into Mining Stock Daily. We have some market commentary and analysis here with our friend Dave Kranzler from Investment Research Dynamics and the Mining Stock Journal. New issue is set to be published later today after the market close, so it's not too late to go over to investmentresearchdynamics.com, inquire about getting yourself a subscription to the journal. Dave, it's been kind of a struggle the last couple of months with this continued downtrend in gold, but let's start with gold here. 8:20 a.m. New York time, price declined. It's just almost inevitable anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we go through these cycles, you know, every so often for as long as I've been involved in this sector, going back to mid-2001. And I mean, I just hope people understand that what they're seeing happen, as you mentioned, at 8:20 or thereabouts, sometimes it's a little before, sometimes a little after, what happens with the gold price is entirely a product of the action on the COMEX, which is not a physical gold market, it's a derivative gold market. And the amount of leverage relative to the amount of physical gold and silver sitting in the vaults at the COMEX that is available for delivery, the amount of leverage versus the paper derivatives, which, you know, the futures contracts outstanding is enormous. So, I mean, it's kind of this a wash, rinse, repeat drill where, I mean, you know, the banks that control the COMEX also have access to the trading system. So they kind of know where the hedge funds have set their stop losses. Now, obviously, you know, with the modern technology, you know, trading and activities like setting stop losses is dynamic, right? I mean, it can change this morning from where the hedge funds might have had them set yesterday. So, the COMEX banks are always probing with paper where the stop losses might be sitting or may have been moved to. I mean, you know, I think kind of generically all these programs kind of follow the same trading algorithms and use the same technical indicators, whether it's hidden pivots, moving averages, etc. So when you see, like, if you look at the just even a 15-minute chart of the June futures contract today, and you see basically what looks like a chart formation of Wile E. Coyote falling off a cliff, something that looks like Niagara Falls. So, and that's a combination of the banks tossing out, for whatever reason, when the COMEX floor opens. I don't know why they don't do it when it's just the Globex trading system, probably because the market's less liquid. And if they push the market down too far, they might not be able to cover a lot of what they've shorted because it'll bounce quickly also. So once the COMEX floor opens, there's more liquidity. They start the process of triggering the stop losses, and then you get this waterfall formation like we see today. And it bounced back pretty quickly. So we'll see where it goes from here. But, you know, what's kind of crazy about it is the action on the COMEX started right after, it wasn't exactly 8:20 today, it was a little bit later. It was after the GDP report was released, and it showed, obviously, you know, 6.4% annualized GDP growth versus the fourth quarter. So obviously the economy's running pretty hot. Well, at least according to the headline report, it's running hot for the upper 10% in this country, certainly not the bottom 90%. And price inflation is obviously raging, notwithstanding the Fed's propaganda to try and deny that price inflation is raging. And so it doesn't really make sense that the price of gold would fall off a cliff like that after a hot GDP number. But it's part of, you know, that they use the price of gold in one sense as a propaganda tool, Because what kind of message would be sent to the markets if gold started to shoot straight up, which it started to do when the number was released? What kind of message would that send to the markets that, you know, the Fed, per yesterday's FOMC policy statement, is going to continue printing money like a drunken sailor and pin the Fed funds rate near zero? You know, so, I mean, and that's why we're getting this massive price inflation. But, you know, gold being the obvious signal that something's wrong with the Fed monetary policy and something's wrong with the system, you know, they want to keep the canary in the coal mine alive. And that's what they accomplish by smashing the price of gold after we get economic reports like we saw today. And it happens all the time, especially when the GDP is released or when the employment report comes out, etc.
Your dog agrees, that's for sure.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. It's all right. He's got the same, emotions regarding this whole thing as you do, Dave.
Oh, she's pissed off about this right now. I'm trying to get her to cool down. It has nothing to do with the guys outside working in the neighbor's yard.
It was interesting last night before I went to bed. I mean, Asian markets pushed gold up to about 1790. It's hard to get excited about those early hours trading, because you know, as it kind of moves through the system, the likelihood any more of it getting pushed down is inevitable. And sure enough, wake up at 5 o'clock this morning and it's deep in the red. So it's interesting. You talked a lot about Asia buying right now.
Right. And, you know, I'll just point out that, you know, the 5 in the morning is not a coincidence. The London AM price fix occurs at 5 in the morning East Coast time. And really, probably when that decline really started to start was 3 a.m. Because that's usually when they start to go to work on the price. The banks will offer out a lot of bullion for sale at the AM fix, and that'll push the price lower. And unless there's, you know, a plethora of buyers willing to take the offerings. But so they try to push the price down on the AM London fix, and then the futures take over from there. And that's usually why you see that pattern. So
you talked about the price spikes and almost everything anymore. Dave, this is just transitory. That's what they said yesterday. So we don't have to worry about this. Not going to last very long. Come on. They didn't change anything yesterday. I mean, Jerome Powell stood up there, basically read off the same thing he read off last week. I got to admit, there was a couple of questions that was actually asked from the media that didn't think it was going to be asked. So that was a pleasant surprise. One of them was really the Fed's action within the housing market. Why is the Federal Reserve continuing to purchase assets in the housing market when we're seeing 12% increase in homes year over year? That's not transitory.
Did he answer that question?
Not very well.
He probably talked around it.
Yes.
I'm curious. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Powell's private office, maybe when he has a couple of his colleagues or, you know, his buddies around, and they've got their tumblers full of high priced single malt scotch. I'd love to be able to hear, you know, the conversation about, geez, you know, I wonder if the public really believes what I'm saying about price inflation.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I just can't believe that a reasonably intelligent human being could stand up in front of the public with a straight face and really believe it when he tells us that inflation is quote unquote going to be transitory. And, you know, I mean, by the Fed's own numbers, they're saying price inflation is only running at about 2.4% annualized right now, which is absurd. I mean, as you pointed out, I mean, housing prices, God, I think I saw a statistic generically, they're up something like, I don't know, 12% or 20% just since the lockdown period last year. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple. There's a real couple interesting dynamics here, I hope we can talk about this housing market because obviously, it's very similar to what we saw, 13, 14 years ago. There's a housing market that is inflating in price. It is not allowing new buyers to come in and purchase homes. It's pricing them out almost automatically. And in fact, there's so little inventory on the market in the housing market right now that there's probably more realtors than there is homes available in many places.
Actually, that's an official statistic. I saw that a couple weeks ago. I saw a news report that said there's more realtors across the United States now than there are homes on the market.
Unbelievable.
I mean, here's the thing. It's similar in some ways to what we saw in the housing bubble that occurred from just say generically 2003 to 2008. And in ways it's also dissimilar though. That housing bubble was both an explosion in sales volume and an explosion in price, and it was driven by the massive flooding of subprime mortgages that were made available, and part of that was tied to the amount the money that Alan Greenspan printed and threw into the financial system after the tech crash, he started pumping money, God, I don't know, probably late 2001, 2002, something like that. He also pumped money when we went into Iraq. He pumped money into the system so the markets wouldn't take a dump. And it ultimately worked its way through the system and found its way to the housing market. And that's what we've had this time around. And you don't have the 125 loan to value loans, although they are starting to come back in the private mortgage market. They're not available and guaranteed by Fannie and Freddie, but they are starting to come back to a degree. It's not as crazy as it was back then, but really what you have now, it's not so much an explosion in sales volume. It's an explosion in the price. And as you pointed out, the Fed's been buying mortgages all along, except that one brief period when they tried to quote unquote taper, or they tried to reverse some of the QE. I think they got about a little less than 10% of the way done before they stopped doing that and had to start dumping money back in the system. And then obviously you saw how much, everyone knows how much was dumped into the system last March and April, and a large portion of that went into the mortgage market. And ever since then, the Fed's been printing, and this is the language of the Fed, at least $120 billion a month, consisting of $80 billion in treasuries and $40 billion in mortgages. So, you know, if you toss a couple trillion into the mortgage market, you're going to cause a price bubble, and that's what we have. And the federal government contributes to that because every year now that they raise the limit for conforming loans. And now the limit just, again, generically, it varies depending on what area you're in. Like if you're in a very high priced area, I think the conforming limit is plus or minus 700,000 in terms of the size of mortgage you can take out. But let's just say here in Denver, it's higher than the generic limit. But let's just say, you know, I want to say going back to 2015, the limit was $480,000 that you could take out, and, you know, including over and above your down payment. Your down payment actually had to be much higher than it has to be now. Now your down payment can be anywhere from 0 to 3%, and it doesn't even have to be cash coming from your own pocket. It can be in the form of friends and family loan or sweat equity that you put in, whatever. So the point here is that, now I think the generic conforming limit is, I want to say 550 or 580. I don't remember the precise number, but you know, that in and of itself. So now you're what, about 15% above the conforming limit where it was, you know, just 5 years ago. And that in and of itself builds price inflation into the home prices, because it allows buyers to take out a larger mortgage. So it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It's a vicious feedback cycle where, oh, here, you can have more debt because houses have got more expensive. Well, guess what? Houses got more expensive because you're giving people more debt to buy the homes with. And now we're at the point where if you're kind of an average middle-class household, and that I'm talking about definitionally the non-top 10%, and you're living in a you know, maybe it might be your first house or your first move-up house. Well, now if you want to, you know, improve your house and do a move-up or a second move-up, you can't afford to do it because the prices are too high and you don't have enough income to support the amount of a mortgage that it would require to buy the move-up house. And so that right there creates an inventory problem, because people who might otherwise have sold in a normal housing market, they can't sell. They have nowhere to go unless they want to, you know, move into a cheaper home. And, you know, if you wanted to move up, why would you all of a sudden decide, oh, let's move into a cheaper home instead? You're not going to, right? So that kind of creates a giant iceberg, you know, in the middle class in terms of housing turnover. And that's what we're seeing right now. And that's why volume is low, and that's why inventory is low. You know, and they keep telling us that, you know, all inventory is low. Well, that's not true. I mean, new homes go up every day. I mean, you know, in the area where not where you live, because you live in no growth Wheat Ridge, which I love that place where I grew up. But, you know, where I live in North Jeffco, there's plenty of land available to put up homes, and there's plenty of home building going on. So, you know, it's just like we were told a big lie yesterday by the Fed. We're being told a big lie about the housing market also.
Here is the advice that the National Association of Realtors published. Quote, potential buyers may have to enlarge their geographic search areas given the current tight market. If there were a larger pool of inventory to select from, ideally 5 to 6 months supply, then more buyers would be able to purchase properties at an affordable price. We don't even have 5 day supply, let alone 5 hour supply.
That's how fast in Denver, yeah, Denver's hot. I mean, not every area is hot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
if you want to, yeah, enlarge your area. Well, instead of living in a nice Denver suburb, how about if I go look in Western Oklahoma?
There you go. Land's cheap. Land's probably cheaper there.
Exactly.
Dave, we did digress away from the mining stocks a little bit, but it is a really important information, because there is this huge, you know, global macro development coming in. Part of, you know, commodity cycle is turning. Obviously, the housing market is important for the entire machine. So be paying attention to that. It all has implications on really the precious metals and the overall metals complex that we follow so closely. We mentioned it before that you are publishing the new issue of the Mining Stock Journal after the market closed today. I'd like to preview that and not give away all the good takes, but it sounds like that you will be giving your take on this Fortuna Rocks Gold acquisition. You know, without spilling the beans here, you think it's a pretty good deal?
Well, I mean, I spent a fair amount of time, as you know, yesterday on the phone with the company, and you and I are going to be having an audience with the CEO of Fortuna. And let's just say that my take on the stock market's response to this merger announcement is my take is completely different than what the market is telling us about this. So, and I lay out the case. In fact, I've pretty much already written it up. I just need to edit it. I lay out the case in my mining stock journal that'll be released this afternoon.
All right. I look forward to reading that, Dave. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, as always. We need to spend more time face to face. You don't live too far, but it's time for that beer, I think, up at New Terrain.
That sounds good to me. Hey, thanks for having me on. I love being on here, and I'm grateful that you let me write the Precious Metals Market intro on your Mining Stock Daily podcast every morning.
It's a pleasure to see what you're up to every morning with that publication. So let's see what you write about. Dave Kranzler from Investment Research Dynamics, everybody, and the Mining Stock Journal. He's also co-producer and helps me write the morning briefings and the gold and silver analysis. You can go to investmentresearchdynamics.com, pick up yourself a subscription to the journal. We have one more interview to be published later today, and then we're off for the Friday morning briefing, which I'm excited to share. Take care, everybody. Be well. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decision.